unexplained takes many strange forms. It's every mystery that has not been solved, every question that has not been answered. Are ghosts real? Are we alone in the universe? What constitutes a micropenis? I'm asking for a friend. Charlie Clawson and Ben McClay are here to investigate. This is The Unexplained Explained.
Listen to The Unexplained Explained now, right here in the Tofop feed.
A listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax, this is Tofop. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
Hey, Will, sad news.
What?
This will be a couple of weeks later by the time people hear this, but NFL legend and Tofop favourite Dick Butkus has passed away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 80 years old.
Oh.
One of the greatest linebackers of all time.
Oh, man. He's kissed his butt for the final time. If he's cremated, I guess he's going to be a crispy dick. They found a hole that fits the dick and they're going to put the dick in the hole.
Well, I'm going to admit my ignorance here. Like, I actually thought his surname, like the Butkus was B-U-T-K-I-S-S, as in literally what James Fosdyke wrote when he created the artwork. One of our most, didn't rank in the top 10 for the Tefacha ball, but I think the Dick Butkus is one of James Fosdyke's undiscovered classics.
I mean,
it unites all his favorite things. Dick's butt.
It might be just too in your face. It might be too
in your
easy,
butt,
you know
I think,
I mean?
from the sketch is what it was. It was a little too in your butt.
but it wasn't spelt butt kiss. It was actually spelt like the band Kiss, wasn't it?
No. It's Butkus. It's B-U-T-K-U-S, yeah. Butkus.
Butkus.
I guess it's the American accent makes it sound like Butkus. Mm. Butkus.
Butkus.
Like if it's Australian, we'd say Dick Butkus. It's not as funny. If he'd been born in Australia, he would have been spared.
Do you think so? Do you really think so?
Hey, Dick Butkus.
Even if his name was Dick, he had Dick and I mean,
butt's
butt
not really
isn't
common usage here. It's sort of get. It's like Halloween.
But we know what it is.
20 years ago, we didn't use butt, and now all the kids are saying butt.
Yeah, but since Sir Mix-a-Lot, really, like I mean, we've all been aware that like butts and big butts to be admired. Like, you know, in Australia there was no local version of Sir Mix-a-Lot. You know, I like big bums and I cannot lie. They didn't feel like they needed to localize it.
I like big asses and I cannot lie. Like, I'm still flying the flag for ARSE. Like, that Americanism has also come
That's
in.
Gone. It's gone. Ass.
Yeah.
What about asshole? Like,
I hate when people write asshole.
I mean, it's because I still have to say asshole, regardless of if it's written asshole, because if I go asshole, like it sounds like that, which sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I also think that like the phonetic putting the R in for Australians makes sense. Yeah. Asshole. We lean on the asshole. We don't lean on the ass. We ass. It's ass for us.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm an ass guy, not an ass
But also
guy.
You can't – I guess the flip side of that is you can't – like, there is a sort of – like, you can make ass sound sexy or alluring, but ass – like, ass.
Yeah, no, ass, no. You get that ass over here.
Yeah, like, oh, come on, baby. Show me how you work that ass.
Back up that ass. Slap that ass.
It's entirely unappealing, isn't it?
Yeah, but for the whole, like when you're considering it as a like a pejorative, like an insult.
You are an asshole.
When I think that asshole sounds like, look at this asshole.
Yeah.
Right? It's better than asshole.
Yeah.
Like, I think even they we use them in slightly different contexts because I think because sometimes asshole, I absolutely will soften the asshole, right? Right? Like in that, like I'm like, oh, come on, asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, it's like quite common, like
dickhead,
a bit like dick.
Like Australians are very fond of a gentle dickhead, but Americans,
yeah. How's this dickhead?
Do not, like,
what's going on here?
Find out that the hard way living in the States, yeah, that they do not think dickhead can be used affectionately.
No, I mean, I think most of our swears in Australia, you can use both like as an insult, but also as like a sign of affection. Like even the C word, which like in America seems so harsh still, although they're being exposed to more Irish and Australians and they've worked out that it can actually just be used anywhere in a sentence,
really,
for any, pretty much for any meaning. But you know, like, I mean, Australians will use even that word affectionately, right? Like it's not always used as like the cutting insult or some sort of like horrible word. It can be used a little bit more, like with a little bit more fun. I think most of our insults, right, you could use in that same way.
Like what? Like what?
Well, just any insult.
Swear, like, word or any insult?
G'day, fuckhead.
G'day,
like,
fuckhead.
You know what I mean? Like,
you fuckhead.
You know, hey, fuckheads. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know.
Dipshit is another favourite of mine. You dipshit.
Hello, dipshit.
G'day, dipshit. Oh, I don't know.
This,
I think,
look at this. Look at this dipshit over here. I mean, it could still be fun,
I guess
fun,
I'm the dipshit,
right?
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuckstick?
Fuckstick. You're a real fuckstick. Well, your fuckstick's like not
bit
that
harder
fun,
to use. Like, yeah, you've got to think of what's the most affectionate way you could use fuckstick. Come over here, fuckstick.
Yeah, come on, fuckstick. Oh, well done.
Nah, it doesn't quite
like,
work.
I mean, if you were, it doesn't quite work.
Dickhead, I genuinely... Well, I actually have to hold myself back on calling my daughter dickhead sometimes because I use it so often with my friends as a term of affection. And Jem's had to pull me up on it as I'm like going to land a dickhead. I'm like, whoop, cannot say that to a child. Don't want to make that normal behavior.
No, but I agree with you. I love dickhead.
It's in the opening lyrics of Two Guys, One Cup. We call ourselves dickheads.
Yeah. Footy loving dickheads. Yeah. But I feel like that's the, you know, Australian – like self-deprecating underdog, we're all dickheads, and it's when somebody gets a big head and forgets that they're a dickhead that as Australians we like to undermine them. Like we have James Fosdyke's brain will be exploding in how many
his
times.
Hands are scribbling like mad.
Which one do I use of all these times?
Yeah, I guess you're right. It is funny though that we draw the line at certain insults like that can't be used because it's really all about intent, right? But there's just certain words that are irredeemable or certain terms that are irredeemable.
It's almost like language is contextual, Charlie.
Yeah. Let's get into a debate around semantics. Well, Dick Butkus, valet, we hardly knew ye. One of the greatest linebackers of all time, apparently. He was 6'3", 245 pounds. He played his entire professional career with the Bears. And when you look at him, yeah, I think he must have been that whole The Bears sketch from Saturday Night Live, the Chris Farley sketch, and you know, the Dare Bears, it's all the big Chicago guys with the...
Do you believe that Dick Butkus might have been the inspiration?
Just looking at photos of him, and he looks like Cliff Clavin from Cheers. Like he's just the big burly guy, 6'3", 245-pound guy with a mustache, and he played for the Bears. Like that would have to... I'm looking at my own... image as we talk to you with my big mustache. I'm like, maybe I'm Dick Butkus. Maybe one dies, another is born.
I mean, imagine if you just were like, well, that's my look now. I'm going to be the new Butkus.
I think it is my look now. Like I had to be clean shaven for that facial a few weeks back, and then I've since grown the mustache back. And I was thinking to myself, like, it's interesting. My dad had a mustache the entire time I knew him. And it always to me was like old man, like that is a symbol of an old man. And I know that nowadays fashion is very, what's the word, circular, like what was old is new again and young kids have mustaches and stuff now. But I genuinely think that when I look in the mirror now, I feel like a dad because I have the mustache. It's almost like military stripes.
Interesting. No, I don't think so. I feel like you've got a real... Northern Rivers, possibly you could be in a band.
Are you thinking like craft beer, craft brewery owning?
Yeah.
Right.
Like a band that mostly plays acoustic now. Like, you know.
It's because I've got a cap on. But if I took the cap off and I just had the mustache and maybe I wasn't wearing like a sloppy t-shirt, you'd think, oh, yeah, that guy looks like a proper. Oh, I'd probably have to be more clean shaven. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Because like you've got the mustache, but you've also got the rest of the
3-day growth.
It's so funny because I have as like as long a beard as I you
yeah.
Know,
you're
grow,
looking very Wolf Blitzer at the moment.
It has to go tomorrow because we're back into television tomorrow. So this is like the last. But as you can see, like it's still this. It doesn't fill in my beard. Like you have a better 5-day growth than I have a 5-week growth. Mm. Because it's a real effort of like you come out and look at my beard and go, the crops aren't going to reward us again this year, love. Not a good harvest yet again. A few spindly vegetables growing on the – like I can never grow in – like I just can't even imagine if I grew this for like 6 months what it would become. And if I tried to grow a mustache, like the only one that I can't do like there's no sort of connection here to be able to do anything that is below the lip. So it just has to be like that there, which is so I am one of those people that if I try a mustache, 100% we're immediately back in like one of the walls.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like one or
yours
two.
Yours is very angular. Like your mustache has a real like sharp, like almost the like the Star Trek. What is it called? The Starfleet command badge. Yours just comes down in straight lines.
Mine goes
across. Yours goes down.
Yours looks like it could be a mustache of various use occasions, right? Yeah. Like you could take that mustache to a band. You could take that mustache to an 80s cop drama.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's very adaptable. Mine is only for like cricket and military around the 1920s, 30s, and 40s.
That's a brigadier's mustache.
Totally.
But I would argue too that your lack of your sporadic facial hair is actually the favorable spread of facial hair in the modern context. Because if you look at your sort of, well, I don't want to say style icons, but you look at your kind of like guys like Leonardo DiCaprio, David Beckham, you know, Timothy Chalamet, they're all wispy beard dudes. Like they pioneered that kind of look of, oh, yeah, I'll just have a bit of, you know, Johnny Deppy kind of mustache up here and a bit of beard here and I don't really feel
in this area. But that's because they're like cute little boy men.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whereas I don't think that like even at your most generous you could describe me as a cute little boy man.
No, you're more of an asshole or a dickhead.
But I don't feel like if somebody was making a Venn diagram and in one part of it they had Leonardo DiCaprio and Timothy Chalamet, they'd be like, you know what naturally goes with this? ABC panel host Will Anderson.
I'm not saying like the complete package, but if you wanted to like have that sort of, like, you know, Keanu Reeves is almost the same as well. Like you could be more in that Keanu, you're in more of that similar age bracket. Keanu doesn't really grow that full beard, even when he's John Wick. It's a little wispy around the edges there. Like if you think of someone like, I don't know, like Joaquin Phoenix, when he goes full beard for I'm Not There, like that's a full proper beard that he has to bloody treat and trim. Or the guy from Walking Dead, you know, the comedian from watching, what's that actor's name? Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He's more like facial hair like me. Like he can't just let it go untethered and have a cool, fashionable, wispy beard. He's got a bloody manicure, that thing. So you're more the Keanu beard. In fact, that's what I'm going to call you from now on. That's your native title name, Keanu beard. Real Keanu beard Clawson.
Clawson?
I mean, you're my son. That's the other thing I didn't tell you. You're my son.
Oh, daddy.
You're my 49-year-old son.
It explains a lot. This has been a time travel podcast and you've traveled back in time to guide me and mentor me through. And this has just been the best way that you could guide me was to come back and form a friendship with me and then do a podcast.
I'm actually your dad. I mean, that would be news to your dad. How do we break that to your father? That like somehow it's like, because he might not have clear memories of the night you even conceived. It was a long time ago now. So do you think we could trick your dad into believing that I'm actually, like, he's free of any responsibility for any, like.
I reckon dad'd be rapt to have me off the
books. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Doesn't he like that? This explains a lot.
Yeah, I don't even need to get out the PowerPoint presentation to explain time
he's
travel.
Like, no, I'm in.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, he goes, he's yours. I'm in.
So my eldest son is now the farmer. That's good. Yeah, no, it makes sense.
So I just wanted to address something that I guess this is more an oversight of mine, but it falls on both of us as the co-hosts of TOEFOP. Okay. Every week I go through the mail and I find things mm-hmm. that I select things to read out. Yep. And I got this mail. I'm going to use the listener's full name because I think it's important. Okay. This is from Matt Turfrey, and he wrote in just to sort of address the discussion we had about skinny Superman. Why does Superman need muscles? And I'm going to read the letter, and then what I want to get into is at the end of the letter. So he says, "Hello, gents. Last week you talked about jacked Superman. You suggested a skinny Superman made more sense, and you should pitch the idea. Well, I think this has already been addressed in the 1980s show, The Greatest American Hero. He was a skinny, normal-looking guy with superpowers. The hook was the aliens gave him a red suit with special powers, but he lost the instruction manual. We might want to do a deep dive. I hope you do." Okay. So firstly, yes, aware of The Greatest American Hero. We won't do a deep dive on it because I've decided what we will do a deep dive on is your final line of your email where you said, "By the way, I've written to you about 100 times on Patreon with no results. So I thought I would try the regular channels. Good work, lads." So I was like, really? And so I went into Patreon and I found Matt's account. And sure enough, since November 2019, he has been sending us messages, which for some reason we have just never got to. And there's not 100, but there's quite a few. So as a way of making amends, I thought we could dedicate this episode to Matt and his many, many inquiries because he's been a Patreon subscriber from the very beginning. And he's tried to be an active member of the community and he's tried to contribute. And for some reason, I've just ignored him. Like, it just has not come up every time we've done our letters episodes on Patreon or when we've done gone to the Patreon mailbag on the regular show. And he's got a lot of kind of good hypotheticals and questions and lines of inquiry that I thought we could get into. So I don't know, Mike the Third, maybe you want to put in a love songs and dedication sting around here because this episode is all about Matt.
This one's for you, Matty boy. Sorry it took us years to reply. Thank you for your loyalty.
Well, okay. Firstly, I love how you dragged me into this being my responsibility
I
as well.
I said it was my fault, but as
you
co-host.
You certainly did a little. Yeah. You certainly, and I'm like, only in that I've abdicated any responsibility to look at the mail. So I do take that on board. If my fingers are not in the pie, I can't complain about it. So I understand that. So I'm on board with your idea, though. I'm happy for us to go through Matt's various inquiries and answer them all in one. Like, I mean, this could maybe in the future become like a bonus level of Patreon where if you had a series of questions, we could dedicate an entire episode to go through your series of questions.
I think that's dangerous because, I mean, I'm looking it out. We keep getting – we celebrate when we get to the end of a mailbag and then we get distracted and it fills up again. And I'm already looking at the amount of messages on both Patreon and our regular email that we have not answered. So I think once – look, maybe once we get through that, we can decide whether or not we have a listener-dedicated episode. But so this – cast your mind back to a simpler time, Will, to November 2019.
Oh, yeah. Things were going great.
And I was going to say a young – I don't know if he's a young man. Let's say a man – a man called Matthew signed up to Patreon and sent us a message. No, so he signed up in 2017. So he's been a member for and been giving us money for quite a long time.
The good old days.
Does, 2 years.
When the world was great.
Took him 2 years to work up the courage to get in touch with us.
At 2 years, he was just silently supporting
just
us.
Supporting
and then
us.
One day he was like, you know what? Like, I'm a big fan of this podcast. I've been supporting them for a while. I might like reach out. And I might send them a message. So is this message number
this
one?
This is message number one.
Okay.
Sent beautiful. November 21st, 2019. And it starts with a deep cut to show he's a real one. He's a real one.
Okay.
He starts off with, "Dear Bertie Blagari."
Oh, good. That is deep.
That is an early deep cut. I am currently listening to TOEFOP episodes from 6 months ago where you're reading out letters from 12 months ago. Well, guess wow. what? Now we're reading a letter from four years ago.
Welcome to this.
So I thought it was the perfect time to write in.
Oh, man.
I have made a couple of observations, but I'm struggling to turn them into observational humor. Well, Matthew, you have one of Australia's greatest comedians on the mic, ready to turn these observations into humor. Okay. So this is the first observation he's made. I believe that statistically, short people are more likely to own and drive four-wheel drives. Do they enjoy the sensation of being higher than most people around them for a change? That's his first observation.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you could turn that into material. Like, where I would start is, yeah, like, I like his initial observation, which is the idea of just being taller than other people. Like, you know, then you'd sort of look at the idea of, like, a small thing inside a big thing, like, what you would compare that to. Like, I don't know, like a Christmas present that you put in a big box, but it's actually a small thing, or like a Kinder surprise or something, you know, or play on that idea of, like, you could fit another car inside the big car that they could actually be inside, and there's, like, a Russian doll. Or you could think of, like, shorter celebrities that, like, were maybe in these, like, so, like, what's next, Rove in a monster truck,
yeah, yeah.
Like, running over the top of you at the traffic lights going, say hi to your mum for me. Like, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that you could work with, I think, in that perspective. So
could you
– yeah, I like
to
it.
Take away the sort of need to make a joke, if you actually sort of – the actual question of do short people like to be higher? In my experience of hiring, like, moving vans or trucks or anything where I'm higher, I enjoy the feeling. There is something that makes you feel safer even though you are still in, like, basically a box of metal traveling at high speeds along the road.
Oh, it's why the majority of these, like, new four-wheel drives and these American-style trucks that are now in Australia are being sold in the suburbs. Like, all the ads are like, you're in the desert.
Yeah.
You're doing burnout.
Drive through a river.
You and your mate love camping.
Power up this hill.
And then it's like, you're at school pickup.
That's right.
3 o'clock in the afternoon.
You're in a car park that is way too small for the size of this vehicle. All right, second observation. I have noticed an unusually high number of overweight people drive motorbikes and go scuba diving. Is this for the sensation of moving fast and or the sensation of weightlessness, two things they cannot typically enjoy under normal circumstances?
Well, I mean, here's the problem with, like, you know, Matthew's two observations. They're both kind of body shaming. Like, we had a bit of the fun with the short one of short people, but now we seem to be broadening out and it feels a little tougher sell. Like, I mean, maybe back, you know what? Maybe back in 2019, Charlie. They were different times.
Different times.
But society has developed a little since then.
Well, I'll give you a bit of trivia about weightlessness that I've discovered. Iona is way into outer space and learning about, like, planets and all that kind of stuff. And so we've gone to a couple of museums. And did you know, and I didn't know this, that the sensation of weightlessness that astronauts experience are in the space station is not actually zero gravity. What's going on there is that they're in orbit. And the object that they're in is orbiting around the Earth at such speed. What they are essentially doing is in a constant state of falling, so that it's not like they get there with this low gravity. There's still a gravitational force. It's actually gravity pulling them at such a point that they are – it's like being in free fall when you're skydiving the whole time. That's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, does it make much of a difference?
Well, like, yeah, I guess so, because it's different to the sense when you see astronauts on the moon and there's zero gravity, well, there's low gravity. They're doing their bunny hop kind of thing.
Yeah.
That is not the same as what we're seeing when we have the cameras inside the space station. Like, that is people who are falling constantly. Like, it's,
I mean,
less
I,
of
I
a magical
assumed,
experience.
Though, but is the...
Don't you think? Like, the feeling to me of, like, hey, Charlie, when you leap, you'll be unencumbered by the law of gravity. You're going to be able to bounce. That is a pleasurable experience. Or, Charlie, you are falling constantly. Seems like a terrifying, like, pensioner's nightmare.
You're thinking of traditional falling. Like, when you jump on the moon and you come back down, you're still falling. Like, if you were on the moon, would you only be like, wee, like, and then on the way down, oh, my God, what is happening?
No. Like, but I,
because when you're in the space station or, like, in a, like, whatever, yeah. like, you know, in a spacecraft of some kind. Like, yes, you say you're falling, but it's not like you would have the sensation of having jumped off a cliff or something.
No.
Like, it's not like you're constantly like, ah,
there would be
I'm
a sense
falling.
Of inertia, though, surely. Like, that's what they would have to get used to. Like, they say that the astronauts in the first 2 or 3 days of entering orbit get quite nauseous and all that kind of stuff.
I understand, but, like, I'm sure that would be the same if you immediately landed on the moon. Like, you're in a different gravitational, like, force of some kind. Like, I mean, I get seasick going on a ferry, so, like.
All right. So that was 2019.
Yeah.
Okay, a whole 6 months rolls by.
Mm.
Now we're in August of 2020. Oh, sorry. He finishes off by saying, not sure if you have any sticker packs left. I'll find out in 6 months when I listen to your current episodes. Okay.
Well, 6 months was optimistic, it turns out.
All right. 6 months later. Hello, TOEFOP. Is this where I put my TOEFOP respondents? Following your pie talk last episode, God, our show fucking sounds so bad when you hear like other people talk about it.
Or when you hear the show sometimes.
I'm going to draw your attention to the national pie. Are you aware of this, the national pie?
That Australia has a national mm-hmm. pie? No, I wasn't aware.
Strangely, the national pie is sold only in Tasmania. You were talking.
So, is it a brand called National Pie, or is this literally? Did we have a vote at some stage to come up with a National Pie?
I'm not sure, but we were talking at one stage about what is a more healthy version of pie, and Matthew's saying the National Pie is it. Famously, it has very little meat in it, and has been replaced with a lot of soybean. I did a little pie research. It was introduced in 1942, and comes with 128 layers of pastry. And he's put a question mark in brackets after that, so I think he's a bit skeptical on that. It only has 27% Tasmanian beef, which is pretty much just gravy. The soybean is very satisfying and was a real after-pub favorite. I looked up the ingredients, but something worrying I discovered was margarine gold, which sounds synthetic. The picture of the pie wrapping is confusingly 1920s, a gentleman with a sweet mustache and a bowler hat. Like, you could be the face of the national pie. Here are the ingredients if you want to investigate. Good work, lads. Mm. The main ingredient is water. How does that work? Okay. So water is the number one ingredient. Then there's Tassie beef, 27%. Flour, margarine, more water.
No, I mean, what? It's weird that more water is part of it if water is already the main ingredient.
Antioxidant, flavor, color, thickener, shortening, emulsifier, sorbene, lecithin, color, textured vegetables, proteins, onions, margarine, again. Can you put
more
ingredients
just some more
in
margarine.
Different kind of margarine?
It's weird. It's like they asked someone what the ingredients were and they were listing them as they were doing it.
Yeah.
And then some more water. Margarine. A bit more margarine.
I'm just typing National Pie Australia and seeing what we come up with. Okay, yeah, right. So National Pie is, as he described, there is just it's not an actual face. It's just a mustache and a pair of glasses and a top hat.
So like Pringles style.
Pringles style, yeah, but there's no face behind it. More like an invisible man in disguise.
Okay, all right.
So it's Tasmanian Bakeries is the home of National Pie. National Pies is just a brand. It has not been deemed by Parliament to be.
We didn't have a vote and to get a majority vote.
Can you imagine if we tried? God.
Oh, God.
It would have been awful.
Talk about divisive.
All right. So we didn't answer that email either. And then a few months later in October, he writes back, "G'day, guys." And what I love about Matthew is like
you, Matthew.
The optimism with every time he contacts us.
That's right.
It's just
it's good.
They'll eventually notice me.
I mean, will we though? I mean, not here, it turns out, no.
Charlie recently talked about reading a sci-fi book. You also speculated about everyday smart objects wanting to kill us, and I can recommend a book called Robopocalypse, which brings all those elements together. Have you read Robopocalypse?
I haven't, but it sounds like it'd be something up my alley. Although now that everybody else is in like
AI is kind of pretty trendy
caught
now.
Up with the idea that it's like, I'm like, with me again, like I don't like to think that we are a futurist podcast, but often I think about the things that we have talked about. You're at the start of, you know, TOEFOP, where it was very much about like our, you know, that we loved like comic books and comic book movies and our obsession with like the idea that like there'd be more of them and they'd explore different stories and multiverses and time travel. That was something that we were very much into. We would talk about the wrestling and, you know, how we wanted that to become more mainstream. And then, like, AI and the worry around, like, everything that we talked about in the early days of TOEFOP is coming true, Charlie. Yeah,
and the world is much worse. It's our fault.
So much worse.
I was thinking that exact thing the other day when I was riding home. I was thinking about superhero films and just like, oh, God, I just don't give a shit about them anymore. And I'm like,
I mean, we were so wrong.
So spoiled.
Like, we were so wrong. We were like, oh, wouldn't it be great if they made them about everything? No, it wouldn't be. It'd be terrible. It'd ruin everything.
It really has. I watched this like 1 hour video essay on like the death of cinema. And they talk about how you can really sort of trace it back to 2000, 2001, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and studios realizing that, oh, it's not actually movie stars and stories that people buy tickets for. It's recognizable IP. And so that
IP, yeah.
As soon as like Tobey Maguire put on that Spider-Man mask and he was on the poster, and studios were like, oh, fuck, we don't even need to hire like a big name actor. This could work. And that's where we are. That's where we are now. Like, they made an interesting point about Chris Evans. They were saying, like, in any other era, Chris Evans, like, people love Chris Evans as Captain America. He's a charming actor. He's good looking, can do comedy. He's like almost, he could be like the modern Harrison Ford. You could plug him into any of those films from the like 80s or 90s that Harrison Ford used to do. But instead, he's doing these horrible, like, Netflix comedies, like Ghosted and stuff, because that's all he can really do. And it's, he can do Captain America or he can do fucking shit Netflix show movies. And that's the only two options for a very talented actor. Talented and popular.
Man, like, if only we'd found some way to monetize how ahead of the game we were.
But we weren't ahead of the game. We were like every other nerd who was like, oh, this will be the utopia that we've dreamed of. And little did we know, not only is that it's the kind of bankruptcy of popular culture and entertainment, but it's also the nasty fucking fandom that came with it. Like, who would have thought that all these fucking nerds who just seeked acceptance and just wanted to belong to a group would become so horrible and vindictive and uninclusive of others with their on their little kind of interest group?
Mate, we've talked about it before, but it's all the fault of Revenge of the Nerds. It set an unhealthy precedent for what nerds should do when nerds were given power.
Yeah, we don't want to say that bullying should make a comeback, but... okay, so he waits another year virtually, Matthew, before he tries out again. But then he addresses us, "Hello, sirs," which is amazing.
Okay. Maybe that'll help.
"I've been enjoying your celebrity scrap series. Remember we did that episode about like celebrity beefs? Many years ago, I remember a scrap between Aussie band Spiderbait and the Canadian band The Tea Party. I've been trying to find details for years. With luck," I think he means with no luck. "One detail I remember is Spiderbait calling the Tea Party a Led Zeppelin cover band. Any more details you can fill in would be amazing. Thanks." What do you got, Will?
So, I mean, I do know Cram. I could probably just like
message him.
Message Cram and go, "Did you ever have a beef with the Tea Party?" I can't find anything immediately.
Remind me
of
the Tea
up.
Party. Who are they? What do they do? What song did they have?
Oh, like,
I'm waiting. Well, I'm waiting. Is that them?
They were we're in deep voice. Yeah. They definitely had a big deep voice.
Yeah.
You
stay silent, always in turn. Yeah, divine, da, da, da. That's like it hearing. Is that them?
That, I mean, that might be them. I remember seeing them at the Adelaide Big Day Out, and I was in it was like 40 degrees, and I was watching the Tea Party at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was Justin Hamilton and I, and there was a woman in front of us who had like essentially like a giant water bottle, like, you know, like this, and passed it back to us, and it was straight vodka, which was not what I needed while I was watching the Tea Party in 40 degrees at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's my memory of the Tea Party.
I remember seeing a video of Mike Patton from Faith No More. You might have seen this. It's from years ago. He's being
Wolf Mother.
Yes.
This is the Wolf Mother one.
Oh, yeah. My God. Like, that has got to be one of the most devastating kind of videos you've ever seen. Like, just the kind of – just the dismissiveness with which he shuts that band down.
Oh, disdain. Disdain is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, thank you.
Just absolute disdain. Stops for what the is interview going on.
To just say how terrible this band is. And I don't know that, like, I mean, look, you can see the Led Zeppelin influence clearly with Wolf Mother, but Tea Party, I don't know.
I mean, the Tea Party, not even the most famous. How do you think that the band, the Tea Party, feel about the fact that they then became the political movement, Tea Party, you know, that American sort of
– the libertarian
like, – yeah, Tea Party movement that was quite popular in America.
Well, it's kind of like that, if you're, that Aussie band She Had, right? Like, they must have really gone, God damn it.
Well, they did. They changed their pacifier name, right?
And then they went back to She Had.
They were a New Zealand band, I think. Okay. I don't know if we're allowed to claim She Had. Okay. But they were quite a good band, She Had. And then 9/11 happened, didn't it? Yeah. Isn't that what happened? And then they changed their name to Pacifier. And then after a while, they're like, well, this hasn't worked out that well, so let's go back to being She Had. They were a good band, too.
I know.
That was unfortunate for them.
Yeah. It's like, I always didn't think of that movie that was released. There was an Aussie romantic comedy called Diana and Me. That was Tony Collette, like, idolizing Lady Diana, and then, like, 2 months before the film comes out, Lady Diana dies. And I remember in the trailer there being this real tacked on kind of bit of voiceover. It's like the trailer starts with, you know, I was like everyone. I was shocked when Lady Diana, but just imagine for a second she hadn't. Yeah. And then here's the trailer. You just see the fucking writer and director. They're like, no! God damn it. Okay. So another year rolls by.
Okay.
And Matthew tries again. Again, sirs.
I appreciate this, like, perseverance, by the way.
I know. You recently discussed, like, it's always too, like, there's always, like, a recency. You recently discussed having a hermit living at the bottom of your garden.
Again, just based on Matt's you recently discussed, if you were trying to get a through line of what this show is about.
Meat pies, celebrity scraps, and hermits living in bottom gardens. Years ago, there was a point of pride amongst aristocracy to have a hermit living full-time on their estate. Sometimes they were sworn to a vow of silence, the sort of thing you would show off to your drunken friends during a dinner party. They might have a hut or a cave to live in. In the early days, they were hinted at. The make-believe hermit at the bottom of the estate, then someone hired a real hermit, and then the trend caught on. Hermits are the source of the garden gnomes people have in their gardens today. That makes a lot of sense. I do like the idea that it started off as just like a joke, and then some rich asshole, and I say ARS. Yeah, asshole. It's like, you know, rather than just joke about, let's get a real poor person.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to be someone's hermit.
Yeah, you've mentioned this.
It's like a real fantasy of mine if a rich person would like to take me on as a hermit.
Well, it is. It's like that abs thing from Five, right? Like he wasn't a hermit. He was more of a pet. Would you be okay being a pet?
No, I want to be a hermit.
Right. So that just free board and accommodation.
So, like, some rich person, who's a good rich person who might like me as a hermit? Like, they just want to be able to say.
Well, you're a lefty, like, so Mike Cannonsbrook.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He's a real lefty
Atlassian
too.
Billionaire Mike Cannonsbrook. Yeah. Like, you know, when he's decided, just for quirkiness, he'd like to. And, you know, he's doing his bit for the arts maybe as well. Like, you know, just spending a bit of his money. He's like, you know. Just on one of my many
couldn't buy the ABC properties. So we'll buy one of the ABC's most prominent personalities
and just make them live as a
hermit. And Kerry O'Brien live at different ends of his estate. I saw Kerry O'Brien the other day. Maybe he was in my pharmacy.
He lives up your way.
Yeah, I think he lives in my town because he was in my pharmacy, and it was. I mean, little sidebar here. Tell me if you think I'm being ridiculous. I am being ridiculous, but tell me how ridiculous you think I'm being.
Great.
So I had to get some cream for hemorrhoids. All right. I'm not proud of it. It's not something I really felt that great about. But in my town, the women who work in the pharmacy, like the pharmacist and the woman, are really like young and super attractive. And I felt more self-conscious about asking them for my, because the cream is called something like Anisole or Proctosole.
Put this in your asshole.
Lumpy ass, lumpy ass grapes.
Are you bleeding from your anus?
Like it's just
gel.
Now, if they had been like unattractive middle-aged men or something, I would have felt less embarrassed. Is that, like, am I crazy? Would you feel the same way? Like, if it was a young, attractive, younger, attractive female, would you feel worse about asking for your dirty butt cream?
I mean, I probably, like, just any young person who doesn't understand that when you, like, because, like, something like hemorrhoids, for example, like, anyone who's been, if it's not like a male-female thing, like, anyone who's like, because obviously hemorrhoids are a thing that happen a lot for people when they're pregnant. So you kind of like, anytime somebody's like been of the age, a woman's been of the age where you're like, oh, well, you might be pregnant. You kind of understand that this is not some reflection on me as a human
personal
being. I'm just a certain age and this is like a blood vessel thing that happens to people of a certain age. You know, it's not like a personal reflection on the fact that I'm a terrible person. But I think there's an age where you suspect, and I don't know if it, I think it would be young men or young women. I'd just be like, you don't understand what old people's problems are, and I would be embarrassed about the fact that you're buying some older person's like thing. I think.
Well, I was in there because I know what the box of the cream looks like, and so I was scouring the shelves, but I couldn't quite find the section. I didn't know where, like, there's no anus section.
No, they're subtle enough about that so they don't have a giant sign with an arsehole on it just like pointing down here.
And so I was scouring the shelves, and one of the young attractive girls behind the counter was like, do you need any help? And I turned around and Kerry O'Brien was standing behind me trying to get to the shelf, and I was like, I can't, not only you, young attractive person, but one of Australia's national treasures and broadcast, like, will he break the story?
I mean,
emergency broadcast.
I mean, you would think, and again, I'm not here to speculate on whether Kerry O'Brien's had hemorrhoids or not, but like, he's of an age and a demographic that would mean that he probably has at some stage. So I think he would actually, he'd be on your side.
He'd nod.
Kerry.
He'd just twirl his little green pen and nod at me.
He's dealt with his fair share of arseholes over his career.
Would you take – back to the hermit. So you – so Mark Cannonsbrook says, all right, Will, you know, you can live on my property. Vow of silence, you're cool with that? Don't have to talk to him or anyone?
Cool with it. It's my dream.
Yeah, but you still have to come out at parties. You're not allowed to talk to anyone. You're just
– I can wander through the yard. I'm not going up close to people, though. I'm not being shown off. I'm going to – it's like a hermit. It's bottom of the garden stuff.
I imagine he has a dinner party.
They can be in the mansion having a dinner party or whatever. They can go out on the balcony. They can see me shuffling around the bottom of the garden.
What if they, like, some of the party want to get a closer look? So they take their drinks, they leave the table, they walk across the estate, and they stare in through your hovel. You've got a little window in your hovel.
Oh, yeah.
And they stare. Would you be okay with that? Like, you're just in there, I don't know, what are you doing, reading, listening to a podcast or something? And then there's like a bunch of Richies looking through the window at you, steaming up the glass.
I mean, yeah, you know what? As long as it's I can't see them.
Okay.
So I want Mike two-way to put glass. In some of that that glass where, like, you know, for me, like, I don't
it's
know what's
a mirror.
Going out. Yeah, it's a mirror. not a mirror, but something. It's something that's not a mirror, because the worst thing is then that I forget that it's a window and I start using it as a mirror.
Trying to
and
play
everyone is on
cream.
The other side.
Okay, so do you need any income, or is the free board, free accommodation?
I just get the impression that, like, he's taking care of all my costs.
Yeah,
like, you know, so
all your debts, he'll settle any kind of financial debts you have. Yeah. They're all taken care of.
But also, just he's like board, accommodation, food, whatever I need. You know, my streamers. Enigma stories.
That's so true. Because I guess you get to write a list of, if he's providing everything, then you need to give him a list of essentials. Because you're not getting like a Rolls Royce or anything like that. Like, it's just living on in the hovel essentials. So you'll just need.
I mean, again, you keep using this word hovel, but like.
You want something a bit nicer than a hovel.
I don't think that Mike Cannon Brooks wants a hovel on his property. Like, I just assume it's the equivalent of his boat shed or like some like janitor's, not like a. Yeah, a cottage that you would have for like a servant.
But is that like? But is that really having like a vagrant living on your property if he's in a house?
Well, I'm not a vagrant. Like, this is more like, you know, this is the modern version of this old idea, because like, you can't have a vagrant living on. This is more like an artist outreach support program where he has his own. You know, it's like
kitchenette.
I mean. And like, he's given me a little creative space, I think, you know, so that I can, you know, work on my projects. Yeah, the podcast studio, exactly.
Finally got your own podcast studio. Okay, and so food's getting delivered to you. You don't need to leave the property.
I'm still allowed to go to work and stuff. Okay, like, because so that's part of the appeal. Like, part of the appeal is that he has this work. Like, it's not just like some old, sad, retired can't work anymore artist. Part of the idea is that, like, you know, that I am still someone doing things. So I still think I go off and, you know, do my jobs and do my projects and those sort of things. But when I come home at night, I come home to the property.
What if he asks you to sign a 5-year contract?
Yeah.
The five years, you're done?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking more like two with like a trigger for a third. Depending on how it goes.
I mean, based on what? What's the performance evaluation here?
I don't know. Like, I think, if it's a status thing and it's about entertaining guests, he would be, every time he has a dinner party or a fundraising event for some wildlife center or environmental, climate change, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, that you would be the star attraction. Is like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your donations towards this, climate change fund. If you cast your eyes to the end of the yard, in that little hovel, you'll see ABC's Will Anderson.
Yeah.
He appears to be shuffling from one side level to the other, listening to a podcast. He does this most days. But let's just see and he presses a little button. You know, it's a little ding, ding. And that's to beckon you. So you've got to come to the window and then you have to, like, wave. And they all, ooh, and ah. And then someone asks, what does he eat? And Mike Cannon Brooks says, human food. He's a vegetarian, but we've found that the national pies are mostly water. He seems to be happy eating those.
They come down, throw pies through the window. Yeah,
that's right. Can we feed it? No. You can't approach him. You can't approach him or feed him, please. I could be okay with being a pet.
Yeah.
I think I'd be all right with being a pet, but I guess it's just the not being able to talk would be harder for me, because I'm a social person and I think I would want to be able to go to the parties. So I'd have to say to Mike, look, I'm not going to embarrass you. I'll still be the hobo and I won't like sit at the table or anything, but let me just come to a party. Just let me chat to a few of your bigwig. I think we'll get on well. I think maybe I'd make some good connections.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's not appealing to the rich person?
I don't think so.
Because it's the opposite of what a vagrant should be, right?
Yeah. No. It might be that sort of idea of going, Mike Cannon Brooks, like, let's just say it's Mike Cannon Brooks for your example as well. He's choosing between the two of us.
Yeah.
And it's gone so well with me living down the bottom of the garden. He's built
another hovel.
On board. Yeah, he's got plenty of houses. So he's like, you know what? I'll bring Charlie on board as well. But different vibe. So you're at his party house. And so when there's a party on board, like, so I think there would be then.
Two. He's got two of us.
Yeah. Right. So I'm more your casual stay at home.
You're the hermit.
Yeah.
And I'm the other one. I'm more like, do you remember? I'm not sure if you ever went to any of these parties, but like at the height of Subi's kind of popularity in Sydney. I remember going to one of their events, you know, launches of a pair of jeans or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a homeless guy who lived on Oxford Street who was quite well known to like all the businesses there.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
And so that guy, he would they would get him to work the parties. Now, I'm not saying that they were objectifying. I think they genuinely were trying to give this guy like, you know, a chop out and stuff. But could it be something more like that where you're the hermit, as in you don't talk to anyone, you're more of a mystique, whereas I am more the good luck story. Like, hey, here's good this podcaster. Chuck. Yeah. You know, podcasts aren't like lucrative industries. And he's been down.
We're giving him a chance.
Yeah. So he's out here mixing drinks and schmoozing and being a glassy and stuff at the party. Yeah, there we go.
But no, but I don't think that you need to be just like, because he can employ people to just change. You're a bit of a, like, I think, like jack of all trades, right? So, like, I think, you know, you're not specifically doing one job at any of those sort of things. You more just, like, float in between. Whatever needs to be done, you're sort of more like
ambassador.
Yes. Yeah. You're just, like, just the, like, of the common people, though.
Yeah.
Like, so he doesn't
non-billionaire class.
Yeah, exactly, right? The remember, you're a representative of the 99%.
Right. I'm making those people feel better about themselves, less disconnected. Because they're like, oh, he's a poor.
I talk to a poor.
Yeah. I know a poor.
Do you know what the poors are into? Wrestling.
Yeah. And mustaches, apparently. Okay. Right. In November of last year, Matthew tried again. Hello there. Wow. I've written to you guys a lot. I just saw the history. I wonder if you've read any of it.
No. Well, no. Not, but now all of it. So.
I just heard episode 402 where you discussed Václav Bartor, who ate the most pancakes at Charlie's old work.
Yes.
Charlie suggested the name could be a pseudonym. Surprisingly, Václav Bartor is an anagram for a baklava or TV. Decisions he's forced to make on a Friday night, perhaps? Baklava being a layered pastry dessert from Turkey.
I'm familiar with what a baklava is.
A baklava or TV. Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, maybe if he was Turkish, maybe that was a tradition in Vaclav's home on a Friday night. He's like, guys, you got two choices. You're going to have baklava or TV, but not
I don't know why you have to make a choice between the two. Like, surely watching TV while eating some baklava is the perfect combination.
As a parent, though, you're often looking for leverage.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, well, I don't want to give them ice cream and TV.
Okay, so you get
or the other. Right. But then you end up giving up anyway. Parenting is a lot about
setting a rule, to having break. Someone not follow the rule.
It's performative. The rule. A lot of it is just for the benefit of like for the press. Yeah, so
that's right.
You are seen to be doing something. Uh-huh. But then in the end, you just collapse because it's so much easier.
Mm-hmm. So you're imagining some nights it's been baklava and TV.
Yeah, well, Jem's going away for almost 10 days today and I am already in my head working out how I can negotiate them. And the thing is you can't spend them all at once. Like you've got to keep some things – you got to kind of keep some things in reserve. And I'm only sort of getting to a point now where I can't trick her into thinking healthy things are treats. Like I used to be able to say, hey, here's a mango. That's like a lolly. But now she's like, that's fucking bullshit. Like, she doesn't say that. But she knows that fruit.
You're a liar. She's a fraud.
Well, I remember my mum doing the same thing to me, but like, it was a different context. Like, she would, like, I'd ask for a treat and she'd give me an apple. And I'd be like, that's not what I meant, like Mars bar. But she, in her logic, was, well, she was coming out of like a World War II era where fruit was genuinely hard to get. Like, if you read those old Ginger Megs and Fatty Finn comic strips, like, it's ridiculous. Those kids will go on adventures to get an apple or a banana or something. It's like, what the fuck is on? Like,
but it was the greatest of all treats, not something that you let rot in your school bag over a week.
That's right. So I've been trying to do that with Iona. I was getting away with mango for a long time because mango is so sweet and delicious and fun to eat and you chill it and all that kind of stuff. But then she cottoned on. It's because you talk to other kids and other kids get – we went camping last
weekend. They rat you out. That's the problem.
They got ratted out. She discovered toasted marshmallows last week and now that is – she's wanting to toast marshmallows all the time. And I don't know if you've seen marshmallows lately, Will, but they do these mega ones, like these giant Toasting.
Don't you worry about that. You don't need to have kids to check out the marshmallow lane. I have been making myself a, because I've got the, you know, as you know, you have as well, but the proper coffee machine at home now. But like sometimes at night, I'll have a hot chocolate.
Yeah,
and then I was like, oh, you know what? I'm making myself a hot chocolate. You know what I need? A giant marshmallow.
14 kilo. They're insane, but can you concentrate sugar? That's what I want to know. Because when I.
What do you mean? There's a concentrated sugar. That's a thing.
It is a thing. Like it's more sweetness per cubic inch or whatever. Like, because these marshmallows were the sweetest fucking thing I've ever had in my life. And the kids went ate shit after they ate them. Like it was. Coke, not a cola.
You can increase the, concentration of sugar. Yes.
You can increase the concentration of sugar. So it's like that Simpsons gag when Homer's watching that ad and it's like, we took caramel and put on 4 kinds of sugar. It's like that.
Yeah. And I do think that there is, because I mean, again, it's like your national pie. It's the amount of water or other things that you're
emulsifiers.
Yeah. Whereas like it feels like that there are some things that are pretty much just sugar, right? Like, you know, it's less about the idea that you've packed in more sugar into the sugar, but you've just taken out everything else that isn't sugar and managed to form sugar into something that is just like.
We detected a little bit of fiber in our last test. Get it out of there. No fiber. More sugar. Protein, get out of here. Carbs, out of here. It's all sugar. 100% sugar. All right. We have to make the episode a bit shorter because I've got to take my wife to the airport.
Yes.
Just want to say there's a mini series that I've been working very hard on with Ben McClay from the Bunta Vista podcast called Tofop's Unexplained Explained, and that is out now. 4 episodes in the Tofop feed. They've been coming out every Friday. I would love people to listen to it because I think it's a really great show and I really enjoyed making it. You can also go to patreon.com/tofop to hear every episode ad-free as well as bonus podcasts and bonus content. Will, do you have any live shows coming up?
Well, I have a few things to plug. So firstly, Question Everything is back on the ABC, so you can check that out on ABC iView or Wednesday nights, of course, 8:30 on the ABC. Now, I do have some live improvised shows. I have the Wynnum Fringe. That's Queensland. That's selling very fast. It's on November the 18th. I haven't been plugging that, but apparently it's selling very fast, which is great. But come out to the Wynnum Fringe if you happen to be in Queensland on November the 18th. Sydney, December the 2nd at the Sydney Comedy Store. I am doing What You're Talking About, Will. Then Newcastle, January 17, 18, 19. And then January 20 back at the Comedy Store in Sydney. All those are on sale at the moment.
And Tofop Live, of course, Melbourne shows sold out November 11th. Some tickets still available, I believe, November 25th for the Comedy Store Tofop Live. Link in the episode description below. We'll see you again next week. I'm Charlie Corson.
I'm Will Anderson.
Hope you enjoyed your show, Matty Boy. Right anytime. Talk to you in several years, probably. End of the show. That's it.
How long? Not long. Everyone relax.
Fucking stupid.
Listener.